Okay, so Rabbi Say, our limud of Chofetz Chaim is L'schus Refuah Shleima of Yosef Dov Ben Chayla, Abisai Shal Chayla Yisrael. So, on day four, the chapter is titled Satan's Strategies. And we started learning it yesterday about the various things that the Chofetz Chaim is looking for reasons as to why people speak Lashon Hara. So he said one thing that we mentioned already, and that is that there's a common misconception that if it's true, it isn't Lashon Hara, and that's not true. If it's true, that's not true. If it's true, then it is Lashon Hara, and if it isn't true, then it's Moitzi Shemra, which is even worse, and if it has consequences, then it's Rechilas. So that's number one. So the second, so he said, so for that reason, a person will talk himself into believing that it's perfectly okay because it's true. Number one. Next thing he says is that he convinces himself that it says that it's mutter, and in fact, it can sometimes even be a mitzvah to speak Lashon Hara about a rosha. So if he thinks that somebody's done something wrong, then he regards Yenim as a rosha. If he's a rosha, then I'm allowed to speak Lashon Hara about him. Adrabba, it's not a mitzvah to speak Lashon Hara about him, and therefore he will convince himself that this is an evil person, and therefore Lashon Hara is not a problem. So that's another one of the tactics of the Sotan in order to persuade a person that there's no problem speaking Lashon Hara about this a particular person. The next tactic, he says, is that people will say, and this is sort of quite common, people will say, you know what, when you learn Chofetz Chaim, you can't say anything, right? You have to keep quiet. And you dare not say anything because he can find something wrong with almost everything that you say. And therefore, the only etzah to keep Chofetz Chaim is to remain silent. I can't remain silent, therefore I'm going to be speaking Lashon Hara anyway. So, you know, the Ma'alaf Gemina, what I say. That's the argument, yeah? He says, and the Chofetz Chaim used to say that until I wrote my Sefer, yeah, people said to the Chofetz Chaim to his face, you know, now that you publish the Sefer, everything is osa. I can't speak this, I can't say that. People were used to speaking Lashon Hara, and now they can't. And the Chofetz Chaim answered just the opposite. He said, until I wrote my Sefer, Yitaka couldn't say anything. Now that I've written the Sefer, learn the halacha so you'll know what you're allowed to say. Yeah, that was the Chofetz Chaim's answer. And that's what he says here. He says, The Sotan is trying to persuade a person not to speak, to speak Lashon Hara. So he says, yeah, everything, you know, it's impossible. Life is impossible if you keep Lashon Hara. And therefore, I might as well be easy with it. And then he says, the next thing he says, that's why it's widespread. Yeah, and he says, the other thing that people say commonly is that, yeah, Hilchas Lashon Hara is really for tzaddikim, the real frumaks, yeah. We were speaking last time about the veggies who live in vegware, you know, that, you know, they say, you know, the really frumaks, they're the ones who keep Lashon Hara, the people who are very, very erlich, and, you know, nebuch, they mean it l'shem shemaim, yeah, but normal people have to speak Lashon Hara in the course of their daily event. Otherwise, you're not a normal guy. You're just a big frumuck. Otherwise, you're going to vegetate. Another thing that a person says, and the truth is, says the Chofetz Chaim, that speaking Lashon Hara is a lot worse than eating chazer. He said, but eating chazer, he brings down in the Akdoma, you can be over up to 17 assays and lavin by speaking one Lashon Hara, yeah, which you can't do by chazer. So he says it's worse than eating chazer. These people would never contemplate eating chazer, but Lashon Hara somehow seems to be okay. So therefore he says, therefore in this what's called, in this generation, says the Chofetz Chaim, in our generation and in previous generations, it became widespread to speak Lashon Hara, and therefore I wrote my Sefer, in order that when we learn the Sefer, we learn what you can say, and a person is nizo in what he says, and he's careful, and he thinks before he says something, and that way, he can protect himself from speaking Lashon Hara and can still speak to people and about people within the halachas, within the frame.
Shkoyah. Yeah.
Shkoyah, thank you very much. Oh, we've got milk today as well. Yeah, it's luxury. Waiting for
8 hours. Mr. Lashon Hara, sorry. I do it myself every day anyway. I do it every morning.
Yeah, okay, fine. Very good.
Stargate, the Thoroughway, Northwest London, Tuesday, 6th of Shabbat, 16th of January. Rabbi Danny Kirsch, Shlita. Parshas Bo, building Jewish families against all odds. This week's Torah is sponsored by the Simchah Nesuot of Meir Feiner Yor and Debbie Gutler Shetichia. His chasna took place on Tuesday. He wrote and should advise them of his father Shem Yisrael. So today, thank you. Velezchus Hashvuim v'acharim b'milchamo shachzu levotahem l'shalom b'mheiro.
It's such a nice feeling to come into a warm room when you come out from the cold. My father, Zichron Rivocha, was a glove manufacturer, and he was once interviewed on Radio 4, and in the midst of the questions they asked him, Mr. Kirsch, is there any connection between the weather and sales of your gloves? To which my father said, yes, they go hand in hand. So I just want to say it's a privilege to be here once again, and we're going to share some hand-in-hand journeys from one yad to the other yad. The Emek Dover, in his introduction to Sefer Shemos, is bothered by an interesting problem. The different names that are given to the Sforim, Bereishis, Shemos, Vayikra, etc., etc., are pretty well understood and appreciated. However, if you really look into Jewish history and classic Jewish texts, not so straightforward that they're called the names that we give them. In fact, if you see the way the non-Jewish world translates it, right, Vayikra is Leviticus. Yeah? Or you've got Shemos, which is Exodus. Or you've got Bamidbar, which was
Numbers.
And interesting enough, if you have a look in the Bahag, looking at the different names for the Sforim, calls Sefer Bereishis. The second Sefer is called Chumash Sheni. The third one is called Sefer Kohanim, Leviticus. The fourth one is called Kudim, Numbers. And the fifth one is called Mishneh Torah, Deuteronomy, doubling over. But what's fascinating, the Emek Dover points out, is the Bahag calls Shmois Sefer Sheni, Chumash Sheni. And he said, well, why can't we call Leviticus Chumash Shlishi? What's special about this? And the Emek Dover goes on to explain, because Bereishis is the beginning and Shmos is a hemshich of the beginning. Why? Because until Klal Yisrael are free, until Klal Yisrael are able to therefore stand on Maimon Har Sinai, then the purpose of Bereishis hasn't been completed. So it's not a second sefer, it's not a separate sefer, it's a continuation, it's a hemshech of Bereishis. Very interesting introduction from the Emek Dover, where he explains this bahag. If you have the chance to look at it, it's worthwhile. Aniyah Cotton, I'd like to suggest an additional reason why it could be that Shemos is a continuation of Sefer Bereishis. And that is, if you go from the beginning of Bereishis all the way through to the very end of Bereishis, you'll see that there's a battle. There are many battles. One of the battles is creating a normal mishpucha, creating a normal family. Yes, we have tzaddikim, Noach, Mr. Shelach, you have tzaddikim, no question about that. But creating a normal family, and therefore building what will eventually be template for Klal Yisrael, that you have to go through the whole of Sefer Bereishis to get to. In fact, as we know well, the Chazal, the Gemara in Psochim Nunvov, which says that when Yaakov Avinu wanted to give brachas to his children, he wanted actually to describe to them what's going to happen at the end of days. Famously, when the Shechina left him, he felt overvoily. Avram had a Yitzchak, but he had a Yishmael. Family didn't quite get together. Yitzchak had a Yaakov, but he also had an Esav. Overvoily, the Shechina has been taken away from me. It must be that there's a problem with my mishpacha. There's a problem with the children here. I haven't raised the shifty king. I haven't raised the family correctly. At that point, the sons turn to him and say, Shema Yisrael, don't worry, Tata. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. We all, as a family, with our uniqueness as individuals, but as a family, we accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing to fear about, of which Yaakov Avinu answers, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. That's the beginning of the Shema Yisrael, as we understand it according to the Gemara. Because Yaakov Avinu wants to die knowing that Baruch Hashem, we finally made a mishpacha. We finally made a family. And that introduces us to Sefer Shmos, because of course, we have the famous Hemshech, Ve'eleh Shmos B'nei Yisrael, Habboim Mitzrayimah. But the Shari'aron points out, the beginning of Sefer Shemot says, Es Yaakov ish ubeiso boy. That's a very strange language. And in fact, it's so strange that it should headline us to what Sefer Shemot is going to be about. How do we describe the Klal Yisrael Yaakov ish ubeiso boy? Now, the Shari'aron discussing this, and I want to quote to you exactly what he says. He says, Rav Rishonim Pirsha, the what's it mean, Ishu Beso, Hakavona Le'ish Ve'ishtoi. Because we know by Yom Kippur when it's talking about the Kohen Gadol getting Kapora for him and his Uba'ad Besoi, Ba'ad Besoi is including his wife. Says the Shari'aron, bringing the Rishonim, what does it mean, Ishu Beso boy, that every one of the Shvatim came with a wife as well. Pilaploim, very interesting enough. And he goes on to explain it, even the ones who are very, very much younger than that, because it mentions Yehuda's children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and it talks about the generations there. He says they were all married before they came to Mitzrayim. Why? Because the Mitzrayim were so negative in their moralities to anything about Mishpoch and about family. The Mitzrayim not only didn't have families, but they wanted to destroy the whole concept of family. How do we know that? When Avraham Avinu came down to Mitzrayim with Sara Imenu, he had to say, no, say you're my sister, because they'll kill me, because they'll want to take you as a wife. The Mitzrayim are famous for that. In fact, they go on to talk, according to the Yonason Ben Uziel, when Yosef HaTzadik got married, he got married to Osnas from Dina. Why? Yiddish men have got to marry Yiddish women, whatever that means at that time. Very interesting enough. And therefore, what's it mean? Ish ubeisu boyu, that they came with their mishpochas, they came with their families, they came with their wives, because Yaakov Avinu had managed to take Klal Yisrael into a concept called mishpocha, a concept called family. And amazing, Rav Hirsch, speaking about this, points out, what does it mean that it says Yaakov Ishubesa? What does that mean, Yaakov Ishubesa? He says that what was being taught us here is that each one of the Shvatim accepted Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. They accepted the principle that Yaakov Avinu, right? Saba, the Zeda, father. And that everything that Yaakov taught us is Kodesh Kedoshim. But now we're 12 different Shvatim, with different personalities, with different goals, with different objectives, with different abilities. When you see Yaakov Avinu's brochas, he recognizes they're all one, but they're all different as all one. Right? Incredibly different. Yisachar is going to be very different from Zvulun. Right? Very different roles. And Levi is going to be very different from Yehuda. And as you go through the Torah, you watch the personalities of the Shvatim. You go through Tanakh, you watch the personalities, says Rav Hirsch, but look what's being said to us, and this is also principle. You can be different with Ish Ubeso, but you have to accept Yaakov Avinu. The Yaakov Avinu is the trunk, Yaakov Avinu, Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov are the principles, there's the trunk, and then they're the roots that will grow from, or the branches better that will grow from that. Yaakov Ish Ubeso Boy. And then he comes on to this week's Parsha, because he points out an amazing thing. He says, you know, we're talking about Klal Yisrael surviving 210 years of the horror of what Mitzrayim is about. And in this week's Seder, of course, we learn about the final three plagues and the preparations for leaving Mitzrayim. The beginning of Exodus, the beginning of Sefer Sheni, tells us Yaakov Ish Ubeso Boyu, and somehow, miraculously, just about, Klal Yisrael survive, so that the first mitzvah which is given to Klal Yisrael, there was a mitzvah given to Moshe and Aaron and the Sanhedrin, and that's the Chodesh Hazeh in this week's Seder. The first mitzvah, says Rav Hirsch, which is given to Klal Yisrael, Dabru El Kol Adas Yisrael, Leimo Be'esel L'Chodesh Hazeh V'Yichu Lohem, Ish Seh Lebeis Ovois. You're going to bring a korban, but how do you bring that korban? Everybody has to bring a korban Pesach Lebeis Ovois Seh Lebeis. Every person has to bring their own korban for their mishpocha, for their family. What's the definition of your bias? Because Klal Yisrael built batim, as we see with the brochas that Yocheved and Mirit were given. They're going to build batim. And when Klal Yisrael are able to leave Mitzrayim on the 49th, the lowest level of Tumah, they're just about holding on to their batim. They go in as Yaakov Ishu Beisai, and miraculously they come out as the Beis Ovos Seel Abayis. Rav Hirsch explains to us that that incredible, powerful energy which was created by the homes which were being built will become the future of Klal Yisrael as well. So when we see the transition from Bereishis to Shemos, we see the transition of a Mishpocha, and we see the journey of building Klal Yisrael, as if to say, as successful family units. Interesting, I'll just mention it, as they say, en passant, which is that you see in last week's Parsha, something which, unless you're really taking concentration, it could slip by, you don't even notice what's happening. When we introduce Moshe Rabbeinu, Ela Roshe Beis Avos B'nei Reuven B'chor, etc., and we start finding out Reuven Shimon, and then we get on to introduce Moshe and Aaron, there's a few fascinating pesukim which could... Usually when you're telling about mishpachas and you're telling about families, you don't tell me about their wives. But in last week's Seder, it says, Vayikach Amram Es Yocheda Doidosa. In describing who Moshe and Aaron, where they came from, and Miriam, it tells us that Amram took Yocheved, his wife. Interesting enough, Moshe Feinstein points out, why didn't we get told that in Shmos, the very beginning? It says, somebody from the house of Levi takes somebody from the house of Levi. And Rav Moshe Feinstein says, no, because when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, he was a wunderkind. He was this thing. The whole house lit up. This is an extraordinary child. What a matonim in Hashemayim. He says, parents don't get schusim for being the blessings to be giving birth to such an extraordinary child. He says, until we start seeing whether the child's actually going to start fulfilling its potential or not. Kid's an absolute genius, top of the class, amazing. I've never taught a child like this. Yeah. So he's been born with a silver spoon in his head, not just in his mouth. Says when Moshe Feinstein, now Moshe Rabbeinu is going to start fulfilling his mission, we can tell you the names of the parents. Very interesting insight. But we're told Amram and Yocheved. And then if you just down a pin, Vayikach Aaron S. Elisheva ben Aminodov. Now, why do I have to know who she was? So, and everybody says the famous thought about Nachshon and looking into the brothers, the whole thing there. Okay, fine. But the Pasha Pshat is, at the end of the day, the Torah tells me who Aaron HaKohen married. So the Mephoshim mention here that Aaron comes from Shevet Levi with its unique qualities. Elisheva comes from Yehuda with its unique qualities. That's an interesting shidduch. So they all trace themselves back to Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. But now we've got different personalities, different backgrounds. We've got Yehuda, which represents leadership and responsibility. And of course, the Levium, who are the separated Shevet. I wonder what sort of child they're going to be able to produce. I wonder who's going to come out of their family. And amongst them, of course, is Elozer, who will then continue the journey. And then, strangely enough, just to point out, Elozer, who was Elozer, Ben Aaron, he took for Benois Putiel, Loli Isha. And again, Rashi speaks about, what's the whole thing about Elozer taking... So there's two possibilities. Either he was a mishpocha from Yosef HaTzadik, or he was also, not two possibilities, it was from Yosef HaTzadik that he took from the wife's Putiel. And Yosef HaTzadik had incredible self-control as he was building his own Klal Yisrael, but he the very thing, as I said, that Mitzrayim wanted to destroy, Yosef HaTzadik kept strong, very relevant to the introductory words. Or... comes from Yisroi, right? Yisroi, who was Oved Avodah Zarah, and Mamish, he overcame his he became the tzaddik that he became, and from Yosef HaTzaddik as well. And the Torah decides to tell me about the family that they had and whatever it is, and the connection to Pinchas. This is Mamish like a mishpachology. Tell me a little bit about the family. Where are they from? They're from that. So very nice. Your cousins. That's how we introduced to Pinchas. I once saw a beautiful, interesting insight. The Pinchas was the one who fought against immorality, right? So he's taking the koichas, he's taking the power of the Elter Zeder from Yosef HaTzadik, fighting against immorality. And what were the Moabites trying to do? They're trying to get us to commit Avodah Zarah as well, as Chazal explained to us. The promiscuity is there to get the people to the minas. So he had the koyach of the Elter Zedi Yisrael, who overcame the Avodah Zarah, and the koyach of the Elter Zedi Yosef HaTzadik. Amazing. I just pointed out because you don't find this very often, but we're building families, we're building homes, we're keeping the homes alive. And therefore it's very relevant to tell us who all of these people come from and what their backgrounds are. And by the way, for those anybody wants to, who converts to become a Yid, miraculously they can get into the DNA. And some explains that's perhaps why, in this case, we find out that the Alter Zeder was an Ovid Avodah Zarah, but look, he changed his whole life around, and look, he produces Pinchas, who becomes a Kohen in his own right. Interesting in life. That's a conversation for another time. So we begin to understand, appreciate, that what's going on over here is it's building the Mishpocha. We also notice that when we meet Moshe Rabbeinu, really for Kimat, the first time, Vayehi b'yom ha'hem v'yigdal Moshe v'yitel echov v'yar b'siv loisam v'yar ish mitzri makir ish ivri me'echov. Moshe Rabbeinu sees a non-Jew beating up a Jew. So he calls the CST. And what does he do, Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu, makir ish ivri. Why was it that this non-Jew was hitting up a Yid? Because it's about the Shoshlam is bast ivri haya. V'nosen ein of boy. The Egyptian looked at this young woman and said, oh, I'm very interested in her. And he wanted to have his way with her. And the husband comes home, catches them. And so the Mitzri starts beating up the husband, etc., etc. That's who Moshe Rabbeinu was beating up. You're not interfering with Jewish families. Jewish families is the beginning and end now. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been built from Bereishis into Sefer Sheni, the incredible words of the Bahag, and we're building Mishpachas. So the first thing we meet about Moshe Rabbeinu is you don't touch the Mishpacha. You don't touch the Mishpacha. Interesting enough, of course, when we get already to Parshas Pinchas, we have the famous vault where the Torah tells us, when we're again counting, since we mentioned earlier about the names, and we mentioned earlier about giving people names, of course we've got the in Parshas Pinchas, Vnei Yisrael Yotzim Meretz Mitzrayim, right? Reuven Bechor Yisrael, Bnei Reuven Chanuch Mishpachas Achanuchi, says Rashi. Why all of a sudden are we adding a hey and a yud to it? Their names. When we're giving people names, again, this is who came out of Mitzrayim, Achanuchi. And Rashi famously says that the Mitzrayim, that people are going to say, oh, the Mitzrayim, they were in charge of your bodies. They made you work really hard, right? They enslaved you. We bet that they took the women as well. Said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no. I'm going to put the letters of my name to their names to say that I'm going to testify that they remained mishpochas. They remained families. They remained dedicated to Yud-Kei, to the letters of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I'm Ma'ed. I'm testifying to that. And they kept their sanctity, they kept their holiness. So when they came out of Mitzrayim, they're describing them about their mishpochas. When they went into Mitzrayim, they're describing them the mishpochas. And however hard the Mitzri attempted to destroy it, they were unsuccessful. Before Shem points out, why does it say hey and a yud in the names? Why doesn't it have the yud and the hey, the Avishta's name? And of course, it was through the dedication, Psusim Noshim Sidkonius Nigol Avesena. Come back and give a shir about Miriam in more detail, but the women saved Klal Yisrael. So we know famously, when it comes to having a charosis on Pesach, we explain about the apple and the different things, okay, from the Chazal, from the Medrash, Shir Shirim. Of course, we know that Miriam Yocheved managed to hide the women, and when it came to giving birth, looking after them amongst the apple trees. But there's another side to that chazal, which was that Miriam made sure that husbands and wife would be together. Just like she did with her own parents, Amram and Yocheved. Then she continued that. And when the Egyptians wanted to destroy the family, we're going to have workhouses for the men and workhouses for the women, according to chazal, she arranged it that they would have meetings and they would continue their family. They would continue their mishpocha. So I once heard the reason why the hay is before the yud is because ish for isha, you've got the yud and the hay together, and the shechinah is shroy b'hem. Yeah, but it was the noshim sidkonius nigol avaseinu, and they kept the mishpochas together, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts the hay first, because in the word isha you take the hay, and ish, you take the yud. Interesting pshat. You understand what we're saying? It was the Noshim Sidkonius who get first show, because in their zchus, the mishpocha stayed together. They're fighting to keep them together, and therefore the hay. That's an interesting suggestion. So, of course, getting back now to this week's Parsha, trying to understand, you have a fascinating journey, because Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, I'm going to start bringing, there's more to come. There's more to come. Next is locusts. And that these locusts are going to cover the face of the earth, and you won't be able to see. And anything that was left over from the borrowed, they're going to eat as well. Because that's what locusts do. They eat. Right? They get swarms. They eat. They take anything they can get their hands on. Food, grass, anything they want. Umolu botecha, and they're going to fill your house. Ubotei kol avodecha. And then he introduces to tell us the locusts are going to fill your houses and the houses of your servants, right? Ubotei komitzraim, and everybody in Egypt. Locusts are going to fill the houses. Why are the locusts going to fill the houses? They don't eat. They want everything left over from the borrowed. Why are they in the houses for? Now this is also a fascinating shir. And it's based on the Al-Sheikh, for another time. It says the Al-Sheikh, not on this particular Makkah, he talks about it about Dom and Safardea, and last week's Sedra. The Al-Sheikh HaKodesh says that this is Midah Keneged Midah. Why was the first Makkah Dom in the water? Because what the Mitzrim were trying to do is stop the women going to mikveh. And he points out there, it mentions in the first Makkah, it was for 7 days. Other Makkahs doesn't say that. It has a whole connection between Tahara ben Ishla Ishta, 7 days, Dam and Mayim. And he says about the frogs, why does it say the frogs came into the beds? It's a very strange thing to him about frogs everywhere. And the children sing the songs of frogs here, frogs there. They came into the bedrooms, it says in the beds. It says, Asher HaKadosh, I'll tell you why it came into the beds. Because that's what they were trying to destroy, the Jewish mishpacha, the Jewish families. Moshe Rabbeinu, he pointed out, he fought to ensure the security and the spiritual. Extraordinary. And therefore, perhaps, although the Ashkenazi, I didn't see that he says it here, you can suggest that maybe we've got this Makkah again, that they're coming into the houses, because you want to destroy our houses, so we're going to destroy. You can't go anywhere without these locusts attacking you. Nowhere. And of course, what happens when Paris says, I can't cope anymore, you've got to leave. You've got to leave. Who do you want to take with you? Miva mi'ahochim, miva mi'ahochim. So of course, Moshe Rabbeinu says the famous words, oh, you want to know who we're taking? Binareinu vizkaneinu nelech. We're going out as mishpochas. We're going out as families. We're going to take the children. And by the way, the Mefarshim point out, usually you mention the adults first. Why you mention the children first? It's a subject. Why? Ki chag Hashem lonu. Says Rav Hirsch. There's a sefer also, Kometz HaMincha, I think it was by Rabbi Aaron Troy. This Kometz HaMincha sefer, as far as I remember. And there he writes and says, because what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to us and to Paro is, let me explain the difference between your religion and my religion. Your religion is when you go to serve gods, you have the galochim. Right, you have all the high priests, they come out and they said, let me explain to you. Our religion is dramatically different. The yesod of our religion is mishpocha, families. That's how we serve. Seler beis avos. The first korban which was ever bought by Klal Yisrael as they're preparing to get out of Mitzrayim on that level had to be bought in a house. Where was the Zrikas Hadam? According to the Medrash, the Zrikas Hadam was on the lintel and on the doorpost. And therefore that becomes the Mizbeach, as if to say. Incredible. And now you want to know, how are we going to serve our God? Mishpachas, mishpachas. Binareinu bizkaneinu nelech. That's how we're going to do it. We have to be together. And it's extraordinary. The Ad HaYom HaZeh, the Pesach Seder, is binareinu bizkaneinu nelech. Because that's how we were built. And that's what managed to remain from Bereshis. Yaakov Ishu Beisu Boyu. And according to Rav Hirsch, we're coming out. Sela Beis Ovo, Sela Bias. And 3,500 years ago, it's still the bias. B'nareinu b'zkaneinu nelech. You know, when Daniel Taub was the ambassador of Israel to England, he told me a very interesting story. Now, when you're in that sort of ambassadorial position, you get to invite lots of interesting people to your table. And if I remember the story correctly, the Bishop of London wanted to see a Shabbos table. And somehow it had a shprach together with the ambassador, and so he invited him for Shabbos. He told him to come for Shabbos. He came. He was there for Shabbos lunch, or Friday night, I can't remember which one. And of course, the children come back from school, and they all take out their parsha sheets, you know, and all the big, thick pamphlets of everything that they've learned that week, right? And the father goes round and he asks, and they say a Devar Torah, and they sing a song, and whatever it is, and there's a quiz goes on. Yeah? Not an unusual phenomena for us. It may not be unusual for us, but the Bishop of London is sitting there going, how do you do this? How do you do this? Now, this is normal Jewish behavior. Friends, you have to know it is abnormal and strange in the world around us. In the world around us, people don't have meals together, let alone have discussions over the mealtime together. And there's a lot written in modern psychological works about the effect of the destruction of the family, which is having on the greater society. In poverty, in knowledge, in the most simple things like eating properly. If you eat together with your family, the parents can see what it is you're eating. You don't eat together with your family, it goes on and on and on and on. B'nareinu b'zkaneinu nelech. It's not a chiddush for us. That's how we do everything. That's how we live our life. That's how we continue. And you know, when we are reminding ourselves of the story of Pesach, and we read the Haggadah, we'll say, Vayares anyenu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw all the strife and difficulties we were going through. Says the Baal Haggadah, what does it mean to touch up that posuk? Zu precious derech eretz. Did the Mitzrayim try to destroy the Mishpacha? Amongst many other things. Separated husbands and wife, separated families. And Baruch Hashem, b'nareinu v'zkaneinu nelech. We just about made it out. You have to read, Rav Hirsch writes so incredibly in his introduction to Bereishis. And you have to investigate the rise that he brings. Unbelievable. We made it out. And we will continue to make it out. But we have to focus on the greatest brocha, which is Klal Yisrael is built, Mishpocha, Mishpocha. That's how Klal Yisrael is built. And just finally to mention, the whole concept of looking after the Yer, the Ger, the Yosem, and the Almona, Forshim say Nebuch, these are people who don't have families. And for the people who don't have families, we have to look after them. A few years ago, when Rav Matisyahu Zecher Tzaddik Livracha was just about well enough to communicate, I went to speak to him, and I'll just finish with this, about the work that I was involved in with Baalei Tshuva and helping people start. But then they went on, and Rav Matisyahu says, once you get involved with them, they're yours for life. He said to me, would you ignore your own family? Would you say, yeah, well, once you reach this... No, he said to me, they're your family. You've got to look after them. You've got to care for them. And actually, that was probably the last words that he said to me. And it rings in my ear, Ada Yom Hazeh. Don't desert either your biological family. And don't desert Klal Yisrael HaKadosh Baruch Hu's families. We have responsibilities. For those who have families, invest in them. It's the future of the Geula B'mehera. And for those Nebuch who don't have families, make sure that you are part of their family. Zay gezunt, thank you very much.